This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervey's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervey. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervey and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com and Alexa. I am Alan Gervey, the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervey, and Wynn. And today, on Kerry Kasem's birthday, I am here to defer to Kerry on everything. Kerry, happy birthday.
Thank you, Alan. I'm actually having a happy birthday. I'm out of California.
What is that supposed to mean?
Oh, I don't know. Commie country isn't really my thing.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah.
So, where are you?
Las Vegas, which is just a little bit better. It got kind of stringent here as well. But at least most everything is open. They just shut down the bars again, but restaurants and different kinds of activities like meat is out here, so it's nice.
So you went to Vegas to escape the heat of California.
That and to do my oxygen therapy, which I do every few months anyway. So, yeah, those two things.
What are you doing on your birthday today?
Well, I went to Lake Mead. We rented a boat. We swam. We had fun. And then the boat's engine kind of failed, so we couldn't wakeboard.
Oh, that's too bad.
That's okay, though. We had fun anyway. We had a blast. We have a good group of people. So, I don't know. Then my boyfriend's doing some secret stuff for me tonight.
Oh, wow. Well, right. I wish I was there to wish you a happy birthday, but we're doing it now. And I'm sure everyone who's listening, if you want to call in and wish happy birthday to Kerry, 800-222-5222, 800-222-5222. Wish Kerry all the best. That's what I'm doing right now. So many happy returns. You look so young. I don't want to say your age, and I know you're proud of it, but
I'm 48. I feel great. I don't look it, and I'm totally proud. I'm not somebody who's afraid to basically talk about everything. My life's an open book.
Well, that's good. And I'm sure everyone will want to call in and wish you a happy birthday. But we have a show to do today, Kerry. I hope you don't mind on your birthday. I know it's one of your favorite guests. And it's interesting because this week we got an email from Genevieve Wong, who's our producer here at KBC on Gervey's Law. And she books all the guests. And she said something, Kerry, and you know this, in her email she said, over the past 7 odd years that we've been doing the show and over 500 guests that we've had on this show, that the guest today is her favorite guest. And we said, why? And I said, is it because that he practiced law? We've had so many lawyers. I mean, some of the guests we've had on the show, Jerry Spence, F. Lee Bailey, Alan Dershowitz, Ken Starr, Robert Kennedy Jr., Dennis Prager, Cindy Crawford, Aaron Brockovich, Gloria Allred, a lot of lawyers, some not, but this is her favorite. And it's not because he practiced law. It's not because he's black. And it's not because he went to Brown University, but that should have been enough to make him the favorite. It's not because he had a radio show on KBC for about 20 years and he had Larry on the Law, a precursor to our show here on KBC. It's not because of that. It's not because of necessarily his politics or his knowledge of current events and politics. It's not because he's a New York Times best-selling author. It's not because he's such a successful radio show on Salem platform. And it's not even because he just came out with an amazing documentary, the executive producer, writer, and featured in the Smash documentary, Uncle Tom. It's not because of that, Kerry. She said it's because he's such a good guy. We call it a mensch. He's easy to work with. He's cooperative. He's not demanding. He's down to earth. He promotes on social media. He retweets. He lives up to his word, and he's very supportive. Carrie, I know you're happy to share your birthday today with Larry Elder. Larry, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Well, Alan and Carrie, how in the world am I going to live up to that?
I know, right?
Larry,
happy birthday. And if you haven't seen Uncle Tom yet, or if you've only seen it once, I would suggest that you and your boyfriend snuggle up tonight and check it out. It really has gotten a huge critical reception beyond anything I could have imagined. You know how when you do anything, you kind of, okay, this is the worst case scenario. This is what's most likely to happen. This is my most optimistic projections. It's shattered them, both in terms of revenue and in terms of critical reaction. I'm just blown away, honestly.
You know, Larry, well, I was watching it. I was blown away. I couldn't believe it. And I was really proud, you know, to think that we met some years ago through a mutual friend. We went out to dinner, had a nice time with you and Nina. And I was so proud to see, wow, I learned so much from watching the film. Historically speaking, people have to see it, not only for the politics, but just to understand so many issues that we are not seeing in the media today. And I want to read a couple of reviews, because people who hear these reviews will say, I need to see it. The movie is like an alarm clock. Some people might not like what they are hearing when they watch it, but it doesn't change the fact that it's time to wake up. I applaud the courage, the genius, and the love and compassion that went into making this important film. Another review, an absolute must watch, by far one of the most important documentaries of our time. Well done, and thank you, Mr. Elder. Someone else said, truly eye-opening and fantastic to see such a diverse array of characters, each with their own insights and anecdotes. A straightforward and rather in-your-face approach to demolishing the left's insistence on minority control, superb production, cast, and motive. Regardless of your political leaning, this no-holds-barred piece definitely gets the mind racing and questioning all that we are inundated with in the media. A massive eye-opener. I'm a documentary junkie, and this is one of the greatest I've ever seen. Extremely well put together, talking to some of the truly inspirational, intelligent, and motivated individuals who, in my opinion, hold the key to elevate Americans to the next level. Uncle Tom should be nominated. I'm not sure nominated for what, because I don't know that Hollywood would nominate Uncle Tom for an Oscar, but Larry, maybe they would. In my opinion, it should win. Great documentary and one of the best I've ever seen. And, you know, here's another one. This may be the best documentary I've ever seen, and I'm a professional filmmaker. This is one of, if not the most important films of the 21st century. Everyone has to see it. It's truly life-changing. Wow, Larry.
Yeah, yeah. And Alan, you should read the ones I didn't write.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I know for a fact you didn't write any of them. They're from IMDb. If anyone wants to go and see that, you can see all of the reviews and all of the 5 stars, I think. I think there's like 9.7 out of 10 after 350, over 350 viewers rated.
And for comparison's sake, I was looking at Bowling for Columbine, Michael Moore's documentary. Its opening weekend, our opening weekend, doubled the box office opening weekend of Bowling for Columbine, which went on to become the 5th highest grossing political documentary of all time. And when you think about an online release versus a theatrical release, you can pack a number of people in a room to watch an online release. You can watch it as many times as you want. And so it really is even more impressive when you think about that. Also, what I'm really enjoying about this is that people who are on the left wing side, those are the ones I really want to see the movie, if I can get them to come in to see it. The ones that admitted that they're left wing, they write and they say things like, okay, at first I thought it was going to be a movie about you. That would have been boring. The second is, I thought it was going to be an hour and a half of you telling people what to think. Instead, you are suggesting that people in America are free to think, and that black conservatives ought to be able to suggest maybe, just maybe, we ought to rethink our allegiance to the Democratic Party because of vouchers, because of high taxes, because of porous borders, for any number of reasons. And when conservatives bring this stuff up, rather than this sparking a healthy conversation within the black community, it's you're an Uncle Tom, you're a sellout. And the movie simply asks, why can't we have an intelligent discussion, an intelligent debate about the best way forward without people on one side being accused of being self-loathing Uncle Toms, coons, and things I can't say on family radio.
I mean, I see this. It's unbelievable with the Democratic Party. My dad being a lifelong Democrat, I don't think he'd be proud of where, you know, the party stands and what's going on. It's like you can't have a rational conversation. Even if you're just saying, hey, this is just my opinion, the anger and the vitriol is unbelievable. You know, we had Officer Tatum on the show, was it a couple weeks ago? And he was saying, you know, he didn't mind being called an Uncle Tom. He thought it was actually a good thing. Is that the same view you have?
Well, I don't mind it in the sense that I consider the source, and I feel sorry for people who say things like that. It means you are incapable of having a fact-based discussion with somebody, incapable of disagreeing with somebody without using emotion. And it's sad. Officer Tatum is in the film, as are Candace Owens and Alan West and Herman Cain and a number of other people. But the heart and soul of the film is a unknown person. His name is Chad Jackson. He starts the film. He ends the film. And he's just a young man who's a contractor in New York, black, Christian, a Democrat. And a fellow Christian challenged him to read the party platforms of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. And so he did. And after reading them, he said, wow, I'm a Republican. And it's about the grief that he got, including from his own family and mother, for just suggesting that maybe, just maybe, everything is not related to slavery and Jim Crow, and maybe, just maybe, racism is no longer a major impediment in American success today, which is how the people in this film feel. And when you say that, you're ridiculed as an Uncle Tom. What's that all about?
Yeah, right. And he's an incredible story because he's so well-spoken, and he really tried to find out the background of his people, the African Americans, and that's where the history in the film is so important, because he looks back and some of the, and Larry, I know you are an expert in looking at numbers. You've always impressed me with your abilities talk about percentages. And when you looked at, you talk about 1940 to 1960, in terms of poverty, 40% drop in 20 years.
A 40-point drop. It dropped from 87% to 47%. It was a 40-point drop during 1940 and 1960. And this is before any kind of affirmative action program, before set-asides, before the Great Society, which shows you, even during that period of time when clearly America was far more racist than it is right now, blacks were still making progress. What happened? The welfare state incentivized women to marry the government and allows men to abandon their financial and moral responsibility. We've gone from having 25% of black kids born outside of wedlock in 1965 to 70% today. And forget about elder. Barack Obama once said, a kid raised without a father is 5 times more likely to be poor and drop out of school, 9 times more likely end up in poverty, and 20 times more likely to go to jail. Now, the question is, what's causing all of this? And when conservatives, like the people included in the movie, raise these questions, rather than us having a healthy discussion about whether or not the welfare state is helping or hurting, they're called Uncle Tom's, and as a result, mm-hmm. the discussion is not had, and progress is not being made.
You know, it's interesting when you mention Barack Obama. In the film, you see a really interesting scene where people are celebrating, a lot of African Americans celebrating when he's elected. And then as you proceed, you start hearing some noise about maybe he's not doing the best for the country. In fact, maybe he's hurting black Americans more than helping them.
Well, Alan, I have a theory that when Obama got elected, what did he get? Like 55% or 52% of the vote, which was above what most Democrats get. By the time he walked into the Oval Office, his popularity was at 70%. Now, why would that be? Because people who didn't vote for him still pulled for him because they thought at least we're going to stick a fork in this notion of racism being a major problem in America. Because after all, what's the Holy Grail? President of the United States. Jesse Jackson cried the night that he won. In the mid-60s, MLK gave an interview, and he said in about 40 years' time, maybe someday we could have a black president, meaning that's the peak of the mountain. Well, we did it. And people pulled for this guy, and then he gets into office, and what happens? The guy they thought they hired was a guy on 60 Minutes when he was campaigning against Hillary. He wasn't a front runner yet, but he was coming, which is why they gave him the first 60 Minutes interview. And this senator was asked by Steve Croft, if you don't get the nomination, will it be because of racism? And I sat back and I said, let's see how this guy answers this question. And he said, if I don't get the nomination, it will not be because of racism. It will be because I have failed to articulate a vision that the American people can embrace. And I said to myself, hallelujah. I never vote for tax spin regulate Democrats, but at least this guy is not a race card playing Victocrat the way most of them are. What happened? If I had a son, he looked like Trayvon. The Cambridge police acted stupidly. There's a place in Ferguson we have our own problems. He had Al Sharpton to the White House over 80 times in his second term. Why? Because the politician in Obama knows you have to get black people angry, get them all stirred up, get them to become social justice warriors. So they pull that lever for the Democratic Party because the party has successfully convinced black people that we're the party of social justice and these guys over here are the party of racism. And that's what they've done to black people. And I think America thought that Obama was going to put a knife an end to that by getting elected. In fact, he just stirred it up in ways that, in my opinion, were more dangerous than Al Sharpton because he's more respected, he's more convincing, he's more persuasive.
And apparently, when you look at the Black Lives Matter group and the issues that we're seeing now, and we can talk about this after the break because we do need to take a break, apparently he didn't solve all of the problems. So perhaps what you're saying and what the film says has a lot of credibility. Again, I'm not here to judge it, but like you said, when you start talking about this film, it gives you the information. All you have to do is watch it, make up your own mind. You can find it at LarryElder.com or UncleTom.com. We need to take a quick break. We're talking to Larry Elder. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, we're back. We're celebrating Carrie Kasem today. 48-year-old Carrie Kasem. I wouldn't have said that. But for the fact you said it in the first segment, so I'm allowed to now.
Yeah.
You look great. You don't look 48. I'm looking at you right now. We're in different places. For those of you who missed the first part of the show, Carrie's in Vegas celebrating her birthday today, and I'm in the studio at ABC, and we're looking at each other on, what is this, Facebook or FaceTime?
It's a Facebook Messenger call, something like that. Facebook video call, I think.
How come you're not doing FaceTime? We usually do FaceTime.
Well, because I'm usually in the studio on a mic and then using my phone. So I'm on my phone right now.
Okay.
Doesn't work.
I see. I gotcha.
Doesn't work.
But as long as you're having a good day.
I'm having a good day. You know what's so interesting is Larry has the same birthday as my dad.
Really?
Really?
My dad did, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
April 27th, right?
That's right.
Yeah. How do you know that, Carrie?
I just have known that for a long time, and I remembered it when you said happy birthday. I'm like, that's not his, because I thought you said happy birthday to both of us. I'm like, his birthday isn't today. I think it's my dad's. And I looked it up. I was right. Because we've interviewed Larry before, and I've been listening to Larry since I was even, before I even started radio.
So wait a second. Larry, are you, does that make you a Taurus? Or are you?
Yes, yeah, Taurus.
As is your dad. And it's, and you know what's important about strength of character and being a bull? Being really strong in your opinions. And that's two things that both your father and Larry share.
Very true. My dad was on the opposite side of the spectrum, a hardcore Democrat, even Green Party. He was with Jesse Jackson all the way, Rainbow Coalition. In fact, Jesse Jackson, you know, married my father and his wife.
His wife. Your buddy.
Very hard for me to say, step.
Wow.
But yeah.
And I think, Larry, you can respect that, even though you may have a different opinion. And, you know, when we talk about the film Uncle Tom that we're talking about right now, it's not necessarily black and white when a lot of these issues come up. Why did you do the film in black and white? It's so intriguing and so poignant.
I just thought it looked magnificent. When the young filmmaker, Justin Malone, the director and co-writer, came to me with this idea to do the film, he interviewed me first, and then I saw it, and I thought it was just spectacular. And I said, well, your movie is called Uncle Tom, and how far are you along getting it done? And if it were a baseball game, he would have been in the top half of the first inning. And I said, how much money do you need to raise? He told me. How much have you raised? He said, zero. And I said, and he told me he was having difficulty getting some of the people he wanted to interview. And I said, well, let me go into business with you. Let me raise the money. You make me a co-writer. Let me executive produce the film, and I'll raise the money. We'll get it done. And we did. And that was the genesis of it. But one of the things that I'm really pleased about is the reaction that people are getting, and you touched on it, Alan, is the stuff that we do about the history of the both parties. So many people are completely unaware that the Democratic Party was founded. One of its founding principles was the preservation of slavery, just as the founding principle of the Republican Party was to end slavery. And most people are completely unaware that Democrats founded the KKK, not the Democratic Party, but members of the Democratic Party founded the KKK, and that the Democrats were opposed to the 13th Amendment, 14th Amendment, 15th Amendment, and these were the amendments that freed the slaves, that gave them citizenship and gave them the right to vote, at least on paper, and Democrats were opposed to this stuff unanimously. And the pivotal 64 Civil Rights Act, 80% of the Republicans in the House and the Senate supported it. Only 60% of the Democrats did. And so more Republicans supported it as a percentage than even did Democrats. And one of the things the movie, I think, dismisses and deals with pretty effectively is this notion that someday, somehow in the mid-60s, the party switched. The races all left the Democratic Party and became racist in the Republican Party. Really? If you look at all of the Democrats who voted against the Civil Rights Act of 64 in the Senate, ask yourself how many switched. The answer is one, Strom Thurmond. Ask yourself in the House, all the Democrats that voted against the Civil Rights Act of 64, how many of them switched? One, I can't even remember his name. And these Democrats were born Democrats, they were raised Democrats, they died Democrats. The first Republican to win as a senator in Tennessee since Reconstruction was a guy named Howard Baker, and he was a pro-integration guy. So it's a lie. Gradually, the South became Republican, but that took about 30 years for the same reason that my mother started voting Republican. She thought the Democrats became more and more left-wing, more pro-tax, more anti-military, more pro-union, more anti-religion, more pro-abortion, and little by little, the South became disaffected with them. There was no one big switch in one fell swoop, which is what the Democrats have been lying about, in my opinion, for years.
But what's interesting, Larry, from all of that, the corollary is that it is actually impacted the African-American communities with the policies of the Democrats, as you describe in the film. When you talk about a welfare state, when you talk about pushing for what you call handouts and not taking responsibility and the victimization of the community, the racism that, the anger and racism that proliferates throughout the community. Some of these policies can be traced back to the political parties, which the film shows, and people who may not be aware of the history may not understand that maybe it is having an impact on an inability to rise Black Americans up to where they really belong.
Absolutely. You know, one of the people that I introduced to a lot of people who don't know them are people like Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams. And for years, they've talked about the importance of the nuclear family and how government policies have destroyed it. I was on one show recently, and I said the welfare state has done more damage to the nuclear family than even slavery did. During slavery, a kid was more likely to be born under a roof with his biological mother and biological father than today. So I get home, and there's media, I think it's called Media Matters. Is that the left-wing one? Headline, Elder Says Blacks Better Off During Slavery.
Wow. They spin everything, don't they? They spin everything. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And we have to take another quick break, but when you mentioned Thomas Sowell and Walter Williams, and you talk about Booker T. Washington in the film as well, and a lot of other heroes, people who, maybe not everyone thinks of them as heroes, but when you look at role models, these are people that young Black Americans should be focusing on, Martin Luther King and others who really elevated themselves and worked hard, as you have, Larry, in creating your talk show and everything, the film. But right now, and I'm a big sports guy. I watch athletes and I listen to what they say. And so much is counterproductive. I want to talk about it later in the show because, DeSean Jackson for the Philadelphia Eagles said some things that were considered anti-Semitic, which were anti-Semitic. And some of the reaction that we got or didn't get from the Black community is something I want to talk about because there are so many positive role models that Black kids should be looking at, and they're apparently not. We have to take another break, unfortunately. We want to talk about that. We want to talk about Uncle Tom, the film, a little bit more. after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, you are listening to Gervie's Law, and Carrie Kasem is getting a half an hour closer to her birthday celebrations this evening. Carrie, you're so nice to come and hang out with me, even though you're in Vegas, and hang out with Larry Elder.
I would not miss this show. Are you kidding me? Never.
Even on your birthday.
It's Larry Elder. No. I mean, he's one of my favorites. You know, I have my favorites, and he's definitely one of them.
Yes, I know you have your favorites. We won't mention who they are, but we can mention Larry because he's on with us today. And we're talking about Uncle Tom, the documentary. If you haven't seen it yet, it's so easy to see. You know, interesting, Larry. And I want to ask you what the impact might be if we can't return to theaters before the election, because I know that you want a lot of people to see it. It's really easy to see online. It's like clicking a button, getting the thing. It comes instantaneously. But are you concerned that before the election comes in November that there won't be a chance for a theatrical release?
I think that's increasingly the likelihood. In fact, we were doing the movie. We were going to have a theatrical release. This is, of course, before the coronavirus pandemic. And then I realized that people weren't going to theaters. We switched our marketing campaign altogether to make it an online release. And I thought we would have it released online for a few months, and then we'd either develop a treatment or a cure for the coronavirus, or something would happen, it would go away. But it doesn't look like that's the case. So, and that's kind of problematic, because we do want to try to submit it for an Oscar nomination. One of the hoops you have to jump through is it's got to have a theatrical release for a certain period of time. I think it's got to be in L.A. County. So we're working with the Academy to try and figure out what are the hoops to make sure that we do all that's necessary to submit it for consideration. I'm not at all likely that it's going to be nominated, but I'm going to take a shot at it and see what happens.
And you know what? Even if it doesn't get nominated, the fact that most of the the Grammy, the voters are Democrat, that they would have to watch it would be a win, a huge win. It would.
You know, it would be a fly on the wall while they're watching it.
Oh, I know, right? I mean, it just, if they could actually just sit and watch and listen, you know, it might make them think. Might. I don't know. So most of them are so angry, you can't get to them.
Well, David Mamet, the playwright, referred to Thomas Sowell as a man responsible for helping him turn from, quote, being a praying dead liberal, close quote. And he, of course, is featured in the film. And that's one of the other things we point out. There's a magazine called Ebony Magazine. It's no longer as important as it used to be in the black community. But for a while, for decades, it was arguably the most important magazine in the black community. Every black family had it on its coffee table. And every year they have a feature called the 100 Most Influential Black Americans. And in recent years, every year you will not find Clarence Thomas, you will not find Thomas Sowell, you will not find Walter Williams. How can you leave off Thomas Sowell, one of 9 Supreme Court justices? He's not one of the America's most influential black Americans. And Thomas Sowell, he's only written 57 books on economics and various other topics. And as I mentioned, what David Mamet said, he called him America's greatest contemporary philosopher. And Walter Williams is, to my knowledge, the only black man who ever headed up a non-black economics department. He was the chairman of the economics department at George Mason for a number of years. And many black people don't know who he is because the most important magazine for blacks for decades never included them.
You know, if people have a chance to watch it, you know, Candace Owens talks about her political awakening. She calls Larry Elder my mentor in the film. And she talks about how she was transformed by watching a YouTube video with Larry Elder. And then, of course, Larry, you obviously spoke to Candace, and she's so well spoken. You may not agree with everything she says, but at least there's something that some people will take away. Even if they're angry in their quieter moments, they may think, maybe there's something to it. One of the things that you and her and some of the others in the film talk about is having a father in the family. And one of the interesting statistics, and again, I'm not going to go toe-to-toe with you statistically because you're always going to win, but in the film it talks about 85% of the African-American families up to 1962 and 63 had a father figure or a father in the family. And then there was a huge downturn after that.
That's right.
So tell us about that. How does that impact what we're seeing now with Black Lives Matter, with the protests, with a lot of the anger and a different approach to fixing the equality problem in this country from what Uncle Tom focuses on?
Well, let me put it this way. If you were to draw a list of all the things that, in my opinion, plague the Black community, police brutality wouldn't even make the list. White nationalism wouldn't even make the list. The things that the media and the Democrats are complaining about wouldn't even make the list. The number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 problem in the Black community is the absence of fathers. I have been on the air for 35 years, and in 35 years I've tried to get on Jesse Jackson, I've tried to get on Al Sharpton, and I've tried to get on Louis Farrakhan. I've invited them all to my show collectively 200 times. They stopped even returning my phone call. But one of these so-called leaders I was able to get on my program, his name is Kwesi Nfume. At the time, he was the president of the NAACP. And I said to him verbatim my first question, Mr. Nfume, as between the presence of white racism or the absence of Black fathers, which poses the bigger threat to the Black community? And without missing a beat, to his credit, he said the absence of Black fathers. This is what we ought to be talking about. These people out in the streets are angry. They're angry because they are not getting the kind of direction they want to, they need to have. They're angry. Tupac Shakur even said, I know for a fact that had I had a father in the house, I would have had more discipline. I would have been more confident. Denzel Washington did a film called Roman Gabriel Israel, Roman Israel
yes.
Esquire, about the criminal justice system, the Black criminal justice system. And he's on the red carpet, and a reporter sticks a mic in his face and says, what do you think about the mass incarceration of Black people? And I just knew he was going to talk about how the police were railroading Black people, throwing them into jail for no reason. Instead, he said, it all starts in the home. If you don't have a father in the home, the courts become your father and the jails become your home. I saw it in my generation and every generation thereafter. It all starts in the home. Mic drop.
Yeah. Why? Yeah. Why, though, is there been such a change in that regard over the last 20, 30, 40 years?
Because if you, as is mentioned in the film, when Lyndon Johnson launched a so-called war on poverty, he literally sent out social workers to knock on doors and apprise women of the availability of their, quote, right to welfare, close quote, provided there was no man in the house. So there was a disincentive to have a man in the house, an incentive to marry the government, and an incentive to abandon your financial and moral responsibility. And it didn't just affect the Black community. 25% of white kids are now born outside of wedlock. That was the same number of Blacks in 1965 when Daniel Patrick Moynihan wrote a famous report called The Negro Family, A Case for National Action. At 25% out of wedlock birth rate, he thought it was hideous and it was going to lead to all sorts of horrible consequences. Fast forward, 25% of white kids are now born outside of wedlock. As mentioned, 70% of Black kids are, 50% of Hispanic kids are. This is the number one social problem in America. It has an effect on crime, has an effect on dropout, has an effect on your ability to compete as a worker in America, has an effect on everything. And that is the number one problem facing America. And Democrats can't talk about it because they have to look in the mirror. They have to rethink all of the stupid social problems that they have pushed. And Republicans would have to stand up and be willing to take criticism. They don't want to do that either. So it's not even discussed.
Going back to you saying you couldn't get the Black leaders on, like Farrakhan talks mm-hmm. about this. Why wouldn't he come on your show? I mean, he says these stats. He talks about
them. You're right. You are absolutely right. And Kerry have often said, this is a man who at least understands the danger of the welfare state. He even opposed right. affirmative action. He thought it was demeaning to suggest you should lower standards in order for people to compete. But then he throws it in with this mysticism and anti-Semitism and anti-white rhetoric. He says he got such charisma and he wastes it, but he gets it. He's turned around a lot of Black men coming out of prison by getting them to embrace God and to stand up to their responsibilities. And I remember when he did the Million Man March. I didn't embrace right. the man, but I embraced the message.
You know, Larry, and I was going to get to this. I want to talk a little bit about Deshaun Jackson's comments. And it's a good segue because Deshaun Jackson had quotes and references to Farrakhan on his social media, along with his nonsensical apparent quote falsely attributed to Hitler. With respect to Farrakhan, would you have him on your show, given the fact that you agree with maybe certain approach, but given his disposition with respect to anti-Semitism, his feelings about the Jews? And you've been a friend of the Jewish people. You spoke Valley Beth Shalom Synagogue in the Valley, in Los Angeles Valley. How do you have him on the show if he would accept?
Easily. He'd have to be prepared to get his butt kicked, because that's what's going to happen, and that's why he won't accept. He's going to hear everything that you just now said. How in the world can you possibly in America say this kind of stuff? How do you get wealthy? How do you become a multimillionaire in a country that you claim holds black people back, when your whole mantra is the man's holding black people back? That's the kind of stuff he's going to hear, and that is why he won't come on. And there's a problem in the black community, and he's part of that problem. And the problem is anti-Semitism. Most blacks are not anti-Semitic, but according to the Anti-Defamation League, polls they commissioned over years, blacks are 2.5 times more likely than non-black Gentiles to be anti-Semitic. And people like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and Louis Farrakhan are part of the reason. And the other reason is so much ignorance. As you well know, Alan, Jews have been friends for blacks for decades. A man named Julius Rosenwald worked with Booker T. Washington to build over 5,000 schools in the South. At one time, one out of every four black kid in the South was educated in a so-called Rosenwald school. Jews were airlifted out of Israel in the mid-80s and the early 90s by Israel. Maybe 15,000 of them. If you look at polls and you ask Americans, are blacks lazy? Are blacks criminals? Are blacks complaining about racism too much? The ones who are least likely to say yes to any of these stereotypes are Jews. And yet, Jews are often the benefit of anti-Semitic comments made by people like Farrakhan, who has still not been renounced by the Black Congressional Caucus. He still hasn't been denounced by them.
You know,
this is outrageous. And it's outrageous that Al Sharpton has a TV show. This is a guy who in 1991, during the Crown Heights riots, said, if the Jews want to pin their yarmulkes on their heads and come over to my house, let's get it on. The man got famous by falsely accusing a white man of raping a black teenager. Never apologized. He's got a TV show on, and he's talking about racism in America? Are you kidding me? If America were as racist as people say it is, people like Sharpton and Farrakhan and Jackson would be the first one who'd be nailed. Yet all three of them are multimillionaires. How can that happen in a racist country?
Well, and also, when you look at the agendas of Black Lives Matter or anti-Semitism, the Defense League, the JDL, all of these things are not mutually exclusive. And that's what's disappointing about what happened this week with the comments of DeSean Jackson of the Philadelphia Eagles. Nobody came out from the NFL, who fellow players, except about four or five, two of them, Mitchell Schwartz and Jeff Schwartz, were on our show. Julius Edelman of the Patriots said, we support Black Lives Matter. We support all of the causes of equality and helping everyone equally. Why can't other people? Why isn't LeBron James talking? Why isn't Malcolm Jenkins comes out? He called Drew Brees, a horrible person for saying that he wants to stand for the national anthem. Yet he called DeSean Jackson's comments a distraction. The Jewish people aren't our problem. This is just a distraction. Zach Banner, who's going to be on our show in a couple of weeks, a black man, went to USC. He plays for the Pittsburgh Steelers, came out and said, this is ridiculous. We have to support our black and brown brothers, but we can't put other people down. Why is that?
There's a double standard. Obviously, there's a double standard here. DeSean Jackson posted lots of anti-Semitic things over a long period of time. Nobody said a word. Recently, Snoop Dogg referred to Herman Cain, Diamond and Silk, and Candace Owens as members of the, quote, Coon Bunch, close quote. Now, however you feel about Candace Owens and Diamond and Silk and Herman Cain, isn't anybody in the media going to denounce Snoop Dogg for referring to these three people, these people as coons, part of the Coon Bunch? Nobody said anything. And Snoop Dogg has done TV commercials, done stuff with Martha Stewart. He did a Chrysler commercial once. I mean, honestly, the pass that people get for the most vulgar things they've done and said, this is a guy who's referred to women as bitches and the H word, and he's referring to Herman Cain, who's got an undergraduate degree in math, a master's in computer science, as part of the Coon Bunch. Nobody in the media says a word.
Yeah, we need to take a break on that note. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervie and Kerry Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yeah, our board is lighting up. Larry Elder gets people fired up. If you want to hear more of him, you can listen to his radio show every day. What time is that? 6 o'clock LA time, Larry?
That's correct.
Six to nine. You don't want to miss that. You can go to LarryElder.com to watch the film, Uncle Tom, An Oral History of the American Black Conservative.
It's easier to order it at UncleTom.com.
UncleTom.com. It's a one click. I did it so easily. And you watch it in one time. You know, people think, oh, it's a couple hours. It goes by really quickly because you're pretty engrossed in it. So you don't have to watch it three different times. But you can watch it over and over to get more from it. Interesting, the film. It really touching at the end to see in loving memory of Kirk Randolph Elder, your beloved brother who unexpectedly passed away. And he, you know, your tribute to watch Larry Elder's tribute to his brother. If you watch it on YouTube, it's really heart wrenching. And I'm sure he would have loved to see this film.
And my brother was a huge, Alan, a huge movie buff, and I never was. You know, we're born and raised here in L.A., and my brother used to take my little brother and me to Hollywood to go up and down the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and he would point out all the stars, and I'm indifferent. And now I've got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame on the corner of Hollywood and Vine. And my brother, of course, came to the ceremony, and my brother turned to me during this thing. He said, "And you didn't even like movies."
Wow.
Oh, sorry for your loss, Larry. That must have been hard.
He was my best friend. He was a great guy.
And on your show on Fridays.
Yeah, and he just suddenly passed away. He literally was 2 weeks away from his 70th birthday. He was sitting at his computer at 5 o'clock in the morning, and my sister-in-law calls, and she's just hysterical, and she says, your brother is unconscious. And so I was getting ready to go to St. Louis to give a speech, and so I canceled everything, of course, and got in the car and drove down there. And as I'm driving down, I said to myself, what does unconscious mean? I didn't even ask her what that meant. I just got in the car. And then she calls, and she says, he's gone. And I'm driving. I said, what does that mean? She says, he's gone. And she had to say it three or four times before it sunk in. I mean, I had just spoken to him just literally hours earlier. How could he be gone?
It's just crazy.
Man.
Life.
I'm so sorry.
And such a great relationship. I mean, you talk about familial relationships, whether it's a father, a mother, brothers, sisters. You really has such a wonderful memories for, you know, your family growing up. And one of the things, if you read a little bit about Larry and his past, it's really motivational. No reason why others can't share what you've had, with the family.
You know, and the reason, I guess, I'm the way I am is because of my parents. My parents are from the Jim Crow South. My mom, Huntsville, Alabama. My dad from Athens, Georgia. And he was thrown out of the house when he was 13 years old. He never met his biological father. Elder is the name of some guy who was in his life the longest. He was not a particularly nice man. And my father literally was thrown out of the house by his irresponsible mom, and he's 13 years old. You're talking about a black boy, Jim Crow South, Athens, Georgia, at the beginning of the Great Depression. And my dad ultimately became a Pullman porter on the trains, and he joined the military, tried to get him a job as a cook when he got out. He was told, we don't hire N-words in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Comes to California to get him a job as a cook. He still couldn't get a job. They claimed he didn't have references, so they were treating him the same way in 1945 in California as they were in Chattanooga, a little more polite about it. And my dad ended up working as a janitor, full-time job cleaning toilets, took a second full-time job cleaning toilets at another company, cooked for a family on the weekends, and then went to night school a couple of nights a week to get his GED. The man never slept. That's why he was cranky all the time. And that's why I disliked him so much. I thought he was moody, had a volcanic temper. Well, when you don't have any sleep, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, this is how you become. And I didn't realize that until I was 25 years old when we had an eight-hour conversation, and my dad explained his life to me. And during that conversation, my dad got bigger and bigger and bigger, and I got smaller and smaller and smaller because of all the resentment I held against him. And at the end of 8 hours, I'm crying. I said, Dad, can you forgive me for the way I used to feel about you? And my dad said, of course I forgive you. You didn't know. You were a kid, but follow the advice I've always given you and your brothers. Hard work wins. You get out of life what you put into it. You can't control the outcome, but you're 100% in control of the effort. And before you whine about what somebody did to you, go to the nearest mirror and say to yourself, what could I have done to change the outcome? And finally, no matter how hard you work, how good you are, bad stuff will happen. How you deal with that bad stuff will tell your mom and me if we raised a man. And my dad was a lifelong Republican, and the reason for that, he always told my brothers and me, Democrats want to give you something for nothing. And when you try and get something for nothing, you almost always end up getting nothing for something.
Wow.
Yep. And that destroys you. Absolutely. Yeah. So funny, my dad being a Democrat felt that same way. But that's like you have to work for what you have. If you don't work for it, you will never have that self-esteem. You will never have that, you know, that you'll never be proud of it. You'll never be proud of what you have. He always said, if I buy it for you, you won't take care of it. If you work and you buy it, you'll cherish it and you'll take care of it.
You know, there's such a great message there. You know, Carrie, on your birthday, we have to close out the show. But, you know, that's a gift. Larry Elder just gave you his gift on your birthday to think about it. Not something that you haven't practiced throughout your life, but just to hear it again. People have to hear it again. And that's what you hear when you watch the Uncle Tom documentary. Larry, we want to thank you so much for being with us today. Again, we're urging people to watch the film, whatever your political perspective is. You know, it really bothers me when people say, oh, you know, I don't agree with Larry Elder, or I don't agree with the Republicans, or I don't agree with the Democrats, whatever it is. Why can't people just watch something and get whatever you can out of it? Make your own decisions. That's what this film does. It gives you an opportunity to learn a little bit about the history and make your own decisions. And that's Absolutely. An objective Yep. that you Yeah. really were successful with in doing this film. We haven't even talked about some of the other issues. We wanted to talk about police. that's a whole nother show.
I want to talk about Kanye West, too. You have, like, we literally have a minute. Kanye West, is this real or not?
I have no idea. All I know is he hasn't taken out the papers to file to run in the various states.
Right.
If he hasn't done that, then it doesn't sound to me like it's very serious.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know about that. We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see.
And, you know, there's other things as well that we can talk about next time. But we want to wish you all the best with the film. It's a great accomplishment, and we appreciate you being with us, talking to us today on Carrie's birthday.
Oh,
thank you, Alan. I really had a good time. Thank you so much.
All right, take care and good luck with everything.
Right, bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Carrie, that's going to do it. Now you are free. I'm looking at you. I'm blowing you a kiss. Happy birthday.
Happy. Thank you. And you know what? This is a very happy birthday, I'll tell you. One of my favorite guests. He's absolutely amazing, and I wish we had another hour with him. Even though it was my birthday, I would have sat here because I just think he really is the sage from South Central.
He is the sage from South Central. Go out and celebrate. Enjoy.
Thank
we miss you here in LA, but I know you don't miss us being in Vegas. And next week, who do we have on the show next week? We're supposed to promote, and I'm blanking.
Genevieve's going to kill us.
I know. I think it's Gloria Allred, actually. We're going from right wing to left wing. Next week, it's Gloria Allred, I believe, talking about Epstein. I think. Have a great week. See you next time.
This show was furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.